Thank you, Dale, for your work with Friends of Sharati and for sharing that with us this morning. Sometimes these pictures are 1,000 words, so thank you. Well, many Christian organizations around the world and in our community serve, whether it's Mennonite Disaster Service that works in disasters, MCC, and Eastern Mennonite Missions, and others who come together to serve. And then locally, we have New Hope Ministries and Bridge of Hope and Brethren Housing and others. And what we notice is that Christian organizations do a great job in serving the community. I mean, we as Christian organizations are known to serve. Christian church has a long history of people serving. But there are some who have said to me, and maybe to you, some friends of mine who are not followers of God, they may say or have said that we respect what you do as a church, but be careful in patting yourself on the back too much, because the church is not the only organization that serves. And they're right, and it's correct. And also, Christianity is not the only religion that teaches the followers to serve. I mean, our scriptures tell us that we are to care for the widows and the orphans. But in fairness to the Quran, it also tells good Muslims to do some of the exact same things, to serve the community. Back in the Great Depression, one of the ways that people survived was through soup kitchens. And these soup kitchens were not organized necessarily by government agencies, but by the church. But not all of these were by churches. The picture you have up here is one from a great religious leader named Al Capone. Okay, he's a gangster. And he was trying to rehab his image. And he organized one of the biggest and best soup kitchens in Chicago. And so we need to acknowledge that it's not just people of faith that serve. There's many of us outside the church that serve. But there's many who do not believe in God that make great contributions. I read a story this week from a doctor, Dr. Fred Hollows, who's an eye surgeon in Australia. And he works with the Aboriginal people. And the statistics are saying that his impact, that one person's impact, that eye doctor, has impacted over 1 million people. And 1 million people can see better because of his work. And one of the things he would say is this. He says, some of his quotes are, "I believe the basic attribute of mankind is to look after each other." But he is a known atheist. And so one of his quotes also is this: "I care far too much for people to dedicate my life to God." And so it is good to serve our neighbors, to serve those less fortunate. But we need to admit that serving is not exclusively Christian. It's not uniquely Christian to serve those less fortunate. So then, what is unique about Christians and serving? I would suggest to you today that what makes serving as a Christian unique is the same thing that makes Christians unique. It is Jesus, fully man and fully God. He was the greatest servant the world has ever seen. And Jesus saw people differently. He had a different lens of how he saw the world. And what's amazing to me, in the short amount of time that he was here on this earth, and all of the things I could imagine he wanted to accomplish, basically trying to save the world, One of the things that strike me so much about Jesus is this. That he was never too busy for the person right in front of him. He could focus in and zero in and really listen and hear and interact with the person right in front of him. Oh, there was crowds. There was crowds everywhere he went later on in his ministry. There was crowds, but Jesus had this amazing way of focusing on the one, serving the one, working for transformation in that one. And it was something about Jesus, about the way he served, that was different. Not that he just served, but he served the way that Jesus served, and we need to continue to look at that. And so this morning, we're going to look at one story in the Bible that maybe can help us look at how we can do a better job of serving like Jesus served. I would invite you to turn in your Bibles to Mark 5, and that's 1023 in your pew Bibles, page 1023. To look at this story. It's Matthew 5, beginning with verse 21. But before we dive into the text, in the thick of his ministry, this is where we find Jesus. He's teaching and healing and active. And now he's kind of circling back, beginning a journey back to his hometown. And he experiences an interruption. It says this: when Jesus had again crossed over by boat to the other side of the lake, a large crowd gathered around him while he was by the lake. Then one of the synagogue leaders named Jairus came. And when he saw Jesus, he fell at his feet. He pleaded earnestly with him, "My little daughter is dying. Please come and put your hands on her so she will be healed and live." So Jesus went with him. So here we have a VIP, a very important person, a synagogue leader, someone who has a lot of influence, has a crisis, his daughter is dying, and asks Jesus out of desperation of things in his life to help him heal his daughter so his daughter can live. Now, if you were one of the disciples that day, how would have you responded? If I was one of the disciples that day, this is how I may have worked this story. I might have thought, wow, this is a golden opportunity. We have before us a synagogue leader who wants Jesus. And the disciples who have been following Jesus have been paddling upstream. It's been difficult. It seems like the religious leaders were always against them. And so if I'm one of Jesus' disciples in this story, I might say to myself, I think life is about to turn around. The golden break, the moment that this whole movement can change, because one of these religious leaders has come to us, and if Jesus does heal her, and his testimony, what a story we have to tell. It would be like, for you maybe, a big moment, a chance encounter with your boss's boss, as you have the opportunity to lay out one of your ideas that may change the trajectory of your career. Or maybe it's a friend who has a box at a Penn State whiteout game, and they have extra tickets to that game, and you're like, and they offer it to you, and you're like, wow, this is an awesome opportunity. But I believe it's more than a good opportunity. It goes deeper than that in the story. If Jesus heals the daughter, our posture will change. We will have our chests out a little bit more. Ministry will be getting easier. The crowds will grow and will become more important alongside of Jesus. And this movement will have an incredible breakthrough. Jairus is important. He's got influence, and this is their big break. So when Jesus decides to go with him, I can imagine the disciples' excitement. Because for much of their time with Jesus, there's been a lot of stories of frustration. And so they head out. And not far down the road, we experience a second interruption. Verse 24 through 30. A large crowd followed and pressed around him. And a woman was there who had been subject to bleeding for 12 years. She had suffered a great deal under the care of many doctors and spent all that she had. And instead of getting better, she grew worse. When she heard about Jesus, she came up behind him in the crowd and touched his cloak because she thought, if I just touch his clothes, I will be healed. And then, immediately, her bleeding stopped and she felt in her body that she was freed from her suffering. At once, Jesus realized that power had gone from him. He turned around the crowd and asked, who touched my clothes? So we have an interruption into the plan. And there's this issue of blood. Now, we don't know exactly what that issue is, but we do know this, that for 12 years, this woman suffered. And for 12 years, she was ritually unclean. She was an outcast. She was a threat. Because if she touched someone, that person would be unclean also. And that woman should know that she had no business being there in the midst of a crowd. And she should have really known that she had no business being around people, especially when there was a rabbi present. And so, in the midst of him heading towards Jairus' daughter, we have this interruption. And the disciples again, and put yourself in disciples' shoes again, ask another question. Why are we stopping? Because their understanding, their mode, was they saw this opportunity with Jairus and his daughter. They saw the plan laid out perfectly before them. That Jairus is important. But Jesus did not see people the way that we see people. Jesus was not influenced by the status of Jairus or the lack of status of the woman. So if we want to serve people the way that Jesus served people, we need to see people the way that Jesus saw people. And at this moment, we may need to acknowledge ourselves. and own up to that we have our own complicated formula for people. We categorize them and place people in certain categories: social, economic status, dress, how we treat them by whether they're a man or a woman, and this national conversation of the treatment of women in our time is important, and how unsafe people can feel. But these women did not feel uncomfortable in the presence of Jesus. We can see people by how they are successful or by their failures. We see them how they vote or voted. We see them by their race. And yet, it's so clear that Jesus, a follower of Jesus, would have no room for racism for the heart of people who love Jesus. But if we're honest with ourselves, we would admit that there's a tendency to reduce people down to the worst version of their stereotypes. That we would just add another brick in the wall. I think that's a song. That separates us from other people. And while Jesus calls us to unity, sometimes we speak when we should listen, argue when we should repent. Because how we see people and the frame that we see them in matters. And so we take all of this stuff that I just described, all this stuff that is already complicated and a mess and how things are happening in society, and we add the fuel of social media. It's like lighting something that fuels things, social media, about how we see people and opinions that people have about other people that are laid out in social media that is not helping us as a church and as a society. Because Jesus calls people sons and daughters. Jesus sees them different. Jesus is trying to take them from where they are to what they can become. Transformation. And so Jesus feels something when this woman touches him. She had so much faith that she didn't need a conversation with Jesus. She just needed to touch him. In Mark 5:30, it says this: at once, Jesus realized that power had gone out from him. He turned around in the crowd and asked, "Who touched my clothes?" "You see the people crowding against you," his disciples answered, "and yet you can ask, 'Who touched me?'" But Jesus kept looking around to see who has done it. "12 years, unclean. And Jesus calls her daughter." See, not only did he heal her physically, but her heart was healed. And she, through Jesus was allowing her to let go of the label that she had been for 12 years. And how many labels do we accept that the world around us gives? What labels do you need to get rid of that you've been holding on to? Labels like unworthy, unlovable, cannot measure up. We need to accept his healing. This not just physical healing, but this wholeness of healing that he offers. That he wants us transformed in the likeness of him. And then he says, go in peace and be freed from your suffering. When he feels the power go out of him, I would have been one of those disciples that was impatient. Very impatient. Because I had an agenda that I wanted to get to that may help my life be better. And oh yes, it'll be better for Jesus. I would have been that disciple that would have said, Jesus, what do you mean? Who touched you? You look at the crowds. Everyone probably touched you. But don't miss what Jesus said. He said, no, not everyone, but someone. Jesus came for everyone. He came for all people, but he also came for the one. And that one, that forgotten one, may not be in Tanzania. It may not be in Mennonite Disaster Service. That forgotten one could just be the person standing right in front of you. If we're going to serve people the way that Jesus served, then we need to see people like Jesus saw people. And when where this gets complicated, where we as a church and individuals get stuck in the mud is because we see so much. We see everyone. And sometimes do not see someone. I think Jesus, in his kindness, in his serving the woman, he realized, and we can learn so much from Jesus, that for Jesus, the one that was for one for him was the one standing right in front of him among the crowd. Serving the one. Last week, I introduced this Thanksgiving challenge, and we are now in week two. And if you weren't here last week, I made the analogy of Thanksgiving is coming, and I'm down at Oak Grove Farms in the bakery, and I walk outside of the bakery, and I smell these amazing smells. And the closer we get to Thanksgiving, I'm associating those smells with Thanksgiving Day. And if you're new here and you haven't been here for a while, one of the things that we have done is we've gotten into encounter groups. And we say we want to encounter God, each other, and our neighbors. And I think, maybe it's just me, but I think we've been sitting enough in groups now. We're going to continue sitting in groups. But I think it's time for us to get out of that. And to actually go make a difference in someone's life. So my Thanksgiving challenge for you is this, that you would be the one for the one that God placed in your path. Now, if you're looking and you see the way Jesus sees, there will be many opportunities. You will not lack for opportunities for this. And so what can you do? Well, there's many things you can do. You could just listen to that person. Not tell them things, but just listen to their story. You could give a neighbor something here this season. You could maybe go to a coworker that you have not associated with much, but you heard this person has some issues going in their life, and you could just go down there and say, hey, I've been thinking about you, and spend 5 minutes, 10 minutes. See, I don't know where that may lay with you. But I think this Thanksgiving challenge gets us out of the pews, out of the groups, and for us to be like Jesus and say, hey, there's so much going on out there. It can be overwhelming. But I'm going to minister to the one to make a difference in not everybody's life, but someone's life. And so, encounter groups, if you're not in an encounter group, it's okay. You still have this responsibility to go out and to do this. And then see, it doesn't stop right there. Because too many times we do that and we don't get mileage out of this. I don't mean mileage in the way that other people talk. I mean mileage is that we need to come back and we need to be able to tell these stories to those around us, whether they're successes or failures in your human understanding. Because it's not about success. It's about being with someone. And so I'm inviting you to send in an email, a story of what you encountered during this Thanksgiving season. And if Megan's computer crashes because so many come in, we'll just have to upgrade. It's okay. But I'm encouraging you to go that full step because I think we need to do these steps that are important as a church community. And I go back to this verse from last week that I think brings it all together. It says this, 2 Corinthians 2:14 to 15. But thanks be to God, who always leads us in triumphal procession in Christ, and through us spreads everywhere the fragrance of the knowledge of Him in every place. For we are the fragrance of Christ to God, among those being saved, and to those who are perishing.